Good morning, Lagos. This is Dr. Wiba Boer on Power Solutions on Nigeria Info 99.3 FM. It's good to be back this morning, and today we have a special guest by the name of Chinua Azubuike, who is the CEO of InfraCredit, which is a very new and exciting financial institution that he's going to tell us all about. But before we get to that, we'd like to get to know who you are, Chinua. So if you can greet Lagos and then just give us some of your story of how you ended up running this important infrastructure financing organization.
Morning, Lagos. Thank you, Weber. Good to be here with you.
So Chinua is like a hardcore finance guy, so I think he's like shy and nervous. So just bear with. Okay, go ahead.
Great. So my background, I worked here in Nigeria in the debt capital markets. So I've had 15 years experience working in the capital markets, which is where you raise capital for companies looking to raise long-term capital, for governments looking to raise capital, advising, acting as an intermediary. So I did that for over 15 years thereabout, and the opportunity came in 2016 to join the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Authority in collaboration with a development institution called Goranco. They were exploring, you know, establishing this credit enhancement facility, basically a guarantee institution that would help unlock long-term local currency financing for infrastructure in Nigeria. And the journey began then. I joined as a project lead stroke interim head, and my role was to work with both institutions in establishing an InfraCredit. And so, you know, we worked through that process, and here we are. So InfraCredit commenced operations in 2017, and we had a first set of hires join the team. We're about a team of about 15 staff. Our mandate is to help promote long-term local currency financing for infrastructure in Nigeria using our guarantee. So we are a AAA rated financial institution, a specialized guarantee company, with a mission to help unlock pension funds and other long-term investors to invest in infrastructure. To put a context, it's estimated that we have a deficit of, you know, $3 trillion required over the next 30 years to finance the infrastructure gap. In terms of, if you compare the sort of funding gap to the GDP, Nigeria is low compared to other peer nations. And this deficit is growing, but the government is also putting a lot of effort in increasing their budgetary allocation to infrastructure. So you'd find that over the past few years, the current government has allocated more than in the past to financing infrastructure and the capex. But even at that, it's not sufficient to bridge the gap. So there are constraints with the budget for governments, and there's a need to bring in the private sector to finance more of the infrastructure. But to do that, the private sector also have concerns around credit risk. And materially, we have one of the fastest growing pension funds, as you know. It's about 9 trillion naira.
Fastest growing in the world or in Africa? Or what?
I actually think it's in Africa and likely the world, because it's about 15% per annum growth rate.
Okay.
Though it has one of the lowest penetration rate, because if you look at the number of...
So there's still massive room growth opportunity.
Yeah, you see that there is the new initiative on micro pensions, because if you look at the proportion of formal sector to informal sector, there's a huge gap, and there is a need to crowd in the informal sector into the pension scheme. But at that, they could invest up to say 35% of their assets under management in corporate debt securities. But of course, we don't want our money going into projects that have high credit risk or default risk. And so for that reason, as fiduciaries and, you know, managers of contributors' money, they want their capital protected. So our role is to act as a guarantor for eligible projects, providing this guarantee, lending InfraCredit's credit standing to a project. By doing that, it inherits our credit standing and enables, gives confidence to this class of investors to invest in those assets. So that what we're doing is enabling more domestic credit to move to the private sector from pension funds, because you have less of that in local currency happening for infrastructure. And there we've had incidences of foreign exchange risk. So the devaluation risk highlighted one of the big issues with mismatching your funding against your liabilities against your assets when you look at your revenue profile against how you borrow. So the InfraCredit is playing this catalytic role in crowding in commercial and private capital, private investors into infrastructure, helping to bridge the deficit, help to allocate some of that up to $3 trillion of pension funds that can go into infrastructure using our guarantees to crowd in this class of investors.
Right. Okay. So then basically you're creating, like you're saying, you're catalyzing all of this capital that Nigerians actually own this capital. It's their pension money.
Yeah.
But you're making it so that it's safe even when they invest in the infrastructure that we so badly need.
Yes. Okay. Return of capital is important for this class of investors, and protection of capital as well. It's very critical.
Right. So it's actually very apt that you're here to talk about infrastructure generally today before we get into power. Because of the traffic gridlock in Ikoyi, I actually had to take an Okada to get here on time. And it's just another example of the everyday reality of how the infrastructure gap in Nigeria affects everyday life.
Yeah.
But so I know you invest across power, transport, you said ICT. Anyway, so talk a bit more about the different sort of subsectors within infrastructure that you're looking at.
Well, I mean, so infrastructure is broadly, you know, again, it's a foundational basis for economic growth. Mm-hmm. And when we talk of infrastructure, we're looking at long-term assets that provide essential services. Mm-hmm. And these include, obviously, power, road transport, transportation, ICT, broadband, gas distribution, gas development as well. We also look at waste, water.
Okay.
So all of these essential services that cut across, infra-related sectors that that also impact on, on our daily lives.
Right.
So I could just talk to some of our pipeline or the projects we're currently looking at cut across currently. Power, which is a
significant... And it's Nigeria-wide, right?
Yes,
it's
just Nigeria, power is a significant portion of that, mainly because you'd find that... if you look at most operating entities, 60%, the survey showed that 60% of their operating expense goes to diesel power
it's
generation.
It's 60% now.
60%. And
I thought it used to be 40.
It's
wow.
a survey. And these are about 200 companies. And they operate on diesel 80% of the time. This is a survey done by, I think, Augusto some years back.
Wow. Okay.
Now, so that means that if you're talking infrastructure, then power is going to be a significant component of that because dealing with the power problem helps reduce the risk associated with other infrastructure projects. So we're also looking or evaluating projects alongside, the transportation sector, the gas distribution space as well.
And that's for domestic gas distribution.
Yes. Okay. Waste management, water as well. Now, again, the most important thing is ensuring that these projects have to meet the sort of, are revenue generating and have the ability to pay back. And that's where the more technicality is going in terms of cost reflective tariffs and ability to collect.
Yeah. But let's talk about this now, because obviously we have, as everyone knows in Nigeria, we have infrastructure deficit in any aspect of infrastructure. But it's so badly needed. I mean, there is capital, there's private capital, people are willing to pay for these services. Why is it so difficult to get projects going and executed? Why is it so difficult? And I know it's not just a Nigeria problem. This is a general problem with financing infrastructure.
Yeah.
It just takes so much time.
Mm-hmm. There's multifaceted challenges. And there's not one silver bullet, solution. Mm-hmm. But from my experience, what we increasingly find is... these gaps you find that limit bankable projects from coming to the market, there are quite a number of factors. So you look at the preparatory phase of how these projects are developed in the first place. The approach to public-private partnerships and the kind of frameworks that exist in the market. And then you're now evaluating the public policy, stability. So a lot of times investors raise concerns around policy uncertainty, so these risks associated with historical, incidences where contracts are cancelled and, it actually does impact on investor confidence. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you find that there's an infrastructure paradox, which is that you have capital sitting on the sidelines, so it's not a question for funding.
Right.
You see that, but it's a question of where are the projects that are bankable, that are attractive for private sector investment. So I think there's a lot of awareness and engagement that needs to happen to bridge some of the information gaps that also impacts on this. Why we are not seeing viable projects flow through. Mm-hmm. A better understanding of when you talk about allocating risks between the public and the private sector, right. What does that mean? What does it mean to the government? What does right. it mean to the private sector? I think a lot of the conversation is around how much risk is the government willing to take on right. and how much is the private sector willing to hold onto as well. Mm-hmm. As any, you would expect, if I'm investing as a private sector investor, I want to make my money back plus a return. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, the government is also looking at the fact that if the service itself is very essential, they want to retain the right to control tariffs.
Right.
And so you usually have this argument around, you know, can my tariff be cost reflective? Mm-hmm. And will I be able to recover my cost? Who is going to protect me against the risk of demand? So when I invest in a project, I expect a certain level of demand right. for the services.
Which might take time to grow, right?
Exactly. You want to move some of that risk to the government to give mm-hmm. you some assurance mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. you would expect a certain minimum level of mm-hmm. demand, and maybe the government may not be ready to take on that risk.
Right.
So it's really finding the way in which you are able to align and bring necessary tools mm-hmm. to mitigate and allocate risk appropriately mm-hmm. amongst mm-hmm. parties. And that is an ongoing engagement process.
Right.
But yeah, that's part of the challenge you find. Yeah. You're saying, why are we not able to finance these roads? Why are we not able to get power
right.
when it's desperately needed and yeah. there are capital on the sidelines? Why isn't the enabling environment there to enable capital to flow in?
Right. So now, obviously, there's always going to be some infrastructure projects that the government has to pay for it. There's no revenue opportunity. Maybe there's not enough sort of economic activity related to it. And obviously that's basically 100% the government's responsibility. But what's kind of at the sweet spot that makes infrastructure projects work for what you're trying to do, and then to crowd in the private sector? Mm-hmm. What are the types of infrastructure and what are the structures that really work?
Mm. So typically, an infrastructure, a typical infra service is an essential service. Infrastructure mm-hmm. as it provides is long-term, right? So, mm-hmm. And there is a what you call tariff sustainability. Mm-hmm. So people are willing and able to pay for that okay. service, right? And where you find those sort of those futures, then it demonstrates that it's viable. It's a resilient asset mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. As long as there is there's willingness, the income levels of the users mm-hmm. demonstrate that they want to pay because it's an essential service for them.
Right, right.
Then ideally, the private sector should come in to fund those assets, mm-hmm. right, and to provide that service mm-hmm. that the people require mm-hmm. under those circumstances. So when we assess projects, we tend to look out for these key features. Are you able to price and reprice your tariffs or mm-hmm. your fees based on your cost and
right.
inflation? Can it be inflation adjusted? Mm-hmm. Or are mm-hmm. you capped? That's a risk, right?
Right.
But if is the demand inelastic? So mm-hmm. how elastic is the demand? Do people
right.
demand that service and are willing to pay for it? That is a very strong indicator that it's a very essential service. And then more importantly, the policy environment, is the government mm-hmm. providing the enabling environment for that project,
right.
as it were. Once these factors exist, ideally, it's the infrastructure generally are better risk assets than traditional loan assets because
okay.
it's historically it's been proven. There's a Moody's study that shows that the recovery rates on infrastructure assets is actually about 78% to 80%,
okay,
which demonstrates that they have a low default rate.
Right.
Well-structured projects, infrastructure projects. So ideally, it's actually a very safe asset class to
right.
hold.
Okay.
What the challenge is around the perceived risk in yes. a lot of instances, and,
right.
and our role is to
and then in Nigeria the perceived risk is obviously higher
exactly
than,
because
yeah.
as a
yeah.
as a low, less developed, more frontier market,
right.
you tend to see that there are all sorts of uncertainties.
Right.
But again, it's different when you're in country.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you would perceive, or your counterpart sitting in Norway or in London would mm-hmm. see Nigeria risk is different from
mm-hmm.
how you see Nigeria risk
mm-hmm.
living here. Eating pounded yam, going through
climbing Okada,
exactly. So,
yeah.
so you can assess this
yeah.
risk better, and
yeah.
that's the advantage local institutions like
right.
ourselves bring because
right.
we're local, we understand the local market, we engage
right.
with the stakeholders and the regulators
right.
where applicable, and so we're better able to actually at least attempt the first phase of bringing in local capital in
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
more times you find that foreign capital waits for local capital
right.
as the signaling that it's time to come
and then
in.
It sometimes becomes a cycle where both sides are waiting and nothing happens
exactly
here. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So now let's look a bit more at InfraCredit. So this is an initiative actually, it wasn't some private company that came in with this idea and then raised money from the Sovereign Wealth Fund. It was actually an initiative of the Sovereign Wealth Fund.
Yes.
Which I think people need to hear, because I know we're always very hard on our government, sometimes justifiably so. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some of these things out there that are happening that are really interesting, and that government agencies are kind of working to solve problems in a way that we wouldn't have thought of before. So where did this start from, and what was the impetus for it?
Great. Yeah, so the NSIA, the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Authority, obviously was I would say the founding investor, and they envisioned the objective of InfoCredit. And this started because in 2015, there were engagements with the private sector, the pension funds, to invest more in infrastructure. But the feedback was that, well, we're fiduciaries and we're holding contributors' money, and we can't put pension funds at risk in projects that don't guarantee capital protection and return. Therefore, you know, any project, they're not averse to investing, but they need to have this project guaranteed so that, that they're not putting their contributors' money at risk. And the government naturally was concerned about having to guarantee every infrastructure project.
Right.
Because if you look at the deficit, if you expose a government's balance sheet to up to $3 trillion, let's even assume conservatively that it's estimated that you need $25 billion annually to bridge the annual deficit. It's a significant amount of exposure. And so NSIA stepped in to come up with a solution of how they could use their convening role as an institution to incubate and crowd in other investors, the international DFIs, to co-invest in a guarantee company that would now play that role of providing those guarantees to get the pension funds in. And so that's how the initiative started. So the Sovereign Wealth Fund, in collaboration with the Private Infrastructure Development Group, which is an organization backed by the UK government, DFID, alongside four other G2 countries. Page owns Garanco, so it's Garanco is an international DFI. So together, they put together a feasibility study, and I found my role to come in and work with the sponsors in establishing InfoCredit. And I think to date, InfoCredit has demonstrated what a unique kind of public-private partnership could evolve in. And so what you find increasingly is that we need these sort of institutions, what you call intermediation institutions that are public-private partnership-led, that help to fill gaps. And what you have is voids where institutions are lacking, that are unable to help promote, connect between two markets. And that is what InfoCredit is doing, alongside other similar facilities that I believe the NSI is also involved in establishing. So that's a very pioneering role that the Sovereign Wealth Fund has played.
Right.
And we still obviously work and depend a lot on them in supporting our business as we progress. Yeah.
Okay, so now let's move to the power sector. We primarily talk about off-grid here, but let's talk about on-grid first. Are you looking at any on-grid projects? Are any of those bankable right now?
Well, yes, we supported one recently.
Okay.
And that was the first, it's a hydro plant, Shiroro Hydro Plant. And we enabled North Star Power, who are the operators of the Shiroro Hydro Plant, raise 15-year financing from the domestic capital market, effectively from pension funds.
Wow.
Now, it's the first time, that any corporate is able to raise money 15 years in local currency.
Right.
That's very significant for a market like Nigeria, less developed market, where you see where the corporate yield curve, sort of like where corporates can now raise this sort of tenor. And it's very important and very significant. It's a green bond, which shows that we're transitioning now to a carbon, low carbon economy, and that's part of what our sort of development role is. And for that project, it's significant because you find that a lot of companies get because infrastructure is long term, so you get a 20-year concession, and then you end up having to finance a 20-year concession with 4-year financing or 3-year from the banks, So the challenge has always been
the total mismatch.
Can you get long term financing from the banks in local currency?
Right.
What this project is able to demonstrate that is that the local market can provide that tenor. It's quite significant because even the pension funds, it was 60% oversubscribed, which demonstrates appetite from the local market.
Yeah.
It's more now about ensuring that there's an alignment between those who hold those assets, the government, and the private sector in ensuring they meet the sort of preconditions and requirements to access, you know, this long-term financing,
right.
which is available. It's just that it comes with certain terms.
Right. Okay, and how many megawatts is that?
So it's about 600 megawatt install capacity.
Okay.
I think about 300 is what is it's the amount of capacity that they currently have available.
Okay. And is that, are you looking at other projects in the on-grid at this time?
We are looking, but at the same time, working closely in engaging the regulators, because the market is fast, you know, sort of evolving, and it's important to get a good sense of the policy direction.
Right.
So we've seen certain new policies in place, and we need to understand what impact that has on private investment. So it's important that there's a harmony or there's a coordination between. There's a coordination between government policy and investor confidence as well, as much as consumer confidence. So we're looking at the sector. We're looking to see the new cabinet, because that's very important. We want to see the policy direction from the new minister of power. And that would drive a lot of the money sitting on the sidelines, where it will be allocated to.
Right. No, but that's really good news that even the pension funds put money into an on-grid utility scale hydro project. I mean, I think that's really good. And if you can achieve that, you can pretty much achieve any deal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, Zainab, should we go to the phone lines? All right. If you can give us the numbers.
Call us on 01-277-0993, 01-277-1993, 01-277-2993, and 01-277-3993. This is Nigeria Info. We are listening.
All right. So while we're waiting for calls, let's move to the off-grid sector now. Of course, that's sort of the more exciting part of the energy sector right now. What are you seeing there, and are you seeing opportunities there as well?
Yeah, certainly. I think over the past 2 years, we've seen quite a number of very, very interesting business models providing solar solutions. I think what we've grappled with is having to balance against some of the traditional lending requirements for either project finance or infrastructure in general, and understanding the nature of the actual underlying asset class for some of these off-grid projects. So the first project we supported was a captive off-grid power company, which is a company called Viath, and they provide off-grid power solutions. But moving from that into renewables, especially on the solar space.
But tell us more about that deal. What was it? What did it involve?
So the company provides, they have about 5 operating power plants, and they provide captive solutions for...
Okay, but these are small, relatively small power plants.
7 megawatts, thereabouts. Okay. And they basically enter into long-term PPAs with Lagos state government, basically to power the facility. So the waterworks in Lagos, some of the street lights are all powered through their facility.
Okay.
And this is one of, most state governments have this challenge of their... first of all, getting steady power to the center of government. So they need to power their key facilities and the seat of administration.
Right.
And so this is one of the solutions that is also being replicated across most states today.
Okay.
But
the bankability there is also a problem about payment, right? Because if the government is the off-taker, sometimes that creates problems as well, right?
Yes. So you tend to look at the offtake risk and the ability of the government to pay. Of course, we know Lagos State is quite credible in terms of their payments. But there are other ways of mitigating such risks anyway. But what is critical is as well when you recognize that the services are essential. And so, you wouldn't want no water within the state, right? It's essential enough for you to ensure you prioritize those payments. You want your seat of administration to be powered, or your key facilities to be powered. So that also drives what you say, the willingness and ability to pay. But we supported the company to raise a 10-year financing. Our guarantee enabled them raise 10-year financing.
10-year, okay. And with also local investors?
Yes, the 12 pension funds invested in that in 2017.
Okay.
I mean, really, what this is demonstrating is the fact that there is long-term local currency financing, fixed rate from the local pension fund, but it comes with terms. And so it has to be fully protected to a large extent. For those who want to take credit risk, they will, but for most, they want some level of protection and certainty because they're investing contributors' funds. And so, you know, you need to ensure that we do our extensive due diligence,
right.
We do our appraisals, we go get internal approvals, and then we also monitor post-issuance. So, yeah, Biathan is one, and also yeah. Power is the second. Very interesting that the two projects we've done are power-related projects. So, like I said...
Those are your two investments so far?
Yeah, so far, yes.
Oh, wow. Okay, both power. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, again, naturally, in this environment, when you talk of infrastructure, it's heavily power and then others. But increasingly, when we're looking at how you need to diversify your portfolio, so for us, it's an active effort to ensure we have a diverse portfolio.
Right.
So we're actively building projects alongside other other sectors.
Right. And so these need to be relatively large projects for you to get interested, I imagine.
So traditionally, yes, ideally, economies of scale, right? So you typically would be looking at, and these projects are 10 billion, 8.5 billion. The two
Naira.
Projects,
Naira.
10 billion Naira, yeah. 8.5 billion yeah. Naira. These are large figures right. for per project. So yeah, so economies of scale is key. But again, you know, you also need to understand, be responsive to market demand.
Right.
And so if you're finding that there are sizes, you know, that are sort of slightly below that, the question is how are you able to respond to the market demand?
Right.
And it's something we're actually looking at as well.
Okay. All right. And so what are some of the, can you describe some of the other projects that are coming up in the power space?
In the power space?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So in the power space, we've looked at a couple of interesting solutions and these are, as you're aware, the REA backed initiatives. We explored the market solutions. In fact, the Sura market was powered by through one of the Viathan facilities.
Oh, I see.
As well.
Okay.
So, but looking at that as potential solutions, we've seen a couple of companies that provide home solar system solutions, and also do captive also solar solutions as well for government agencies and private sector increasingly C&I so industrials as well. Some we increasingly see this blend where they have this blended solution they provide. They use the grid but also with solar and in some instances gas.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting model that we're increasingly seeing where you're able to have a levelized, an average cost of energy that is actually lower than the traditional self-generation and the grid.
Right.
So they're quite interestingly disruptive in some form, but also at the same time very scalable. But again, given the how nascent that market is, you won't see the scale. So you may see a developer or an operating company seeking to raise 1 billion naira or less to establish its footprint and then begin to scale from there. So it's also trying to understand what financing solutions can be adapted to these operating companies.
Right.
And increasingly, you know, FX risk can be ignored in this equation because a lot of these companies are financed in foreign currency, in USD. And what that does is it means they have to price their own tariffs linked to the USD as well.
Right.
And that creates a potential shock for the consumers.
Right.
So if, in any case, you have an FX devaluation otherwise, you have to push on that cost to the consumer.
Yeah.
So again, being able to immunize this, these risks is where local currency is important. So ideally, they should borrow or finance in local currency to match their revenues so that the consumers also are not exposed to FX risk in their tariff adjustments over time.
Right.
So these are some of these to me, to us, is a sustainable path, you know, to unlocking financing and improving infrastructure.
Right. So before we round up, we're actually already out of time, but just give us, you know, your final words on what are we going to see in power in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years? With initiatives like yours, are we going to see a real like difference, or is it still going to be ad hoc here and there? What are you thinking?
Well, there is there's a strong potential now that we would begin to see some incremental change in terms of access to financing for power. That again will be driven by the policy environment materially. But I think what has been demonstrated over the past few years is that there is access to financing long term.
Right. Yep.
What is critical is that there's an alignment amongst the government policy towards what areas are they enabling access to.
Yeah.
And so we certainly see a potential growth in more private sector led investments and more access to power, especially off-grid and potentially on-grid, depending on the policy environment.
Right.
Yes.
All right. So thank you very much, Chinua. I think we're going to have to continue the conversation another day.
Sure.
But thank you so much for what you're doing with InfraCredit. And also thank you for sort of breaking the complexity of infrastructure financing down for the listeners, for us non-technocrats to understand.
Thank you
very much for coming in. And Lagos, this is the end of the show for this week. So have a great week, and we look forward to coming back next Monday and learning more about power solutions.